And we are live on Facebook, Chris Graham and Josh Deal, and we are going to talk some pro wrestling news, WWE, AEW. We'll look at, you know, we'll look back at Money in the Bank from last week. We'll look ahead to AEW's upcoming pay-per-view Double or Nothing, which is in about a week. And got a lot to go into here, Josh. So first off, how are you doing? How are things going for you?
We're good, man. Just rolling through the quarantine stuff and waiting for work to get back to normal. That's a little ways off for me, but we're doing good. Can't complain. Doing a little bit more, getting a little more serious with the SVW deep cuts kind of thing. And I'm about to launch my podcast via that, the 706 Dirt Sheet kind of thing. So hopefully that'll be something we can talk about seriously in the next little bit. Yeah, we're doing good. Chris, how are you doing, man? How's the Commonwealth? What's the news up there?
Well, you're in Georgia. You guys have been slowly opening for a few weeks now. Today is the first day of our slow open. And I don't know. I mean, I just actually went up, and I'm sweaty still from this. I just went up the street. I'm not maybe a half mile from a local elementary school, and a couple of buddies and I, we went up and shot some hoops on an outdoor hoop, and we just actually were real people for a while. That was interesting. It was really
just
interesting.
To be honest.
Get out there and sweat a little bit, and we ran around and shot hoops So it's a group that normally plays on Mondays and Fridays at the YMCA, which is just up the street from me. So yeah, that felt normal. That felt good to be able to be a real person for about an hour.
Yeah, it's always fun. I've got some friends. We're thinking about considering getting together and doing a pay-per-view. Watching the AEW Double or Nothing together, that kind of a thing, trying to figure out how to do that and where everybody's comfortable with it anyways. But yeah, other than that, we're good. Just watching the world slowly reopen and hoping it doesn't go too poorly with all this slow reopen stuff that's happening. But
well, you guys are a few weeks ahead of us in Georgia, and from what I'm seeing, the numbers actually still look pretty good. So keep it going, Georgia. As long as Georgia's going well, the rest of us will go well too.
Let's hope so, man. We just want SEC football to come back. We don't care about you other guys. That's all we care. We just want football.
Hey, as we've said on our shows in the past, we both have a mutual interest in getting this football season going on time, that because Georgia and Virginia play Labor Day night, and I want to be down your way watching college football on Labor Day weekend.
Absolutely. I hope it happens. The big thing, and one of the – you know, the things that's floating around the college football world right now is whether or not we will have all conferences competing, all conferences are even overlapping and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, the UVA-UGA game right now, that's a little bit more of a question mark. I think the rest of the SEC schedule for Georgia is more than likely going to happen. But that game right there is, we'll have to see if all parties involved can agree on that one. So.
Oh, well, we're ready to play. I've been on the, the ACC, the SEC, in the South, I think we have a priority straight, football and then everything else. So,
if a couple people die, it's okay.
We've got it figured out, though. No, Virginia's ready to play football. I've been on Zoom conferences with players and coaches. They're doing what they can. They're not in weight rooms, and neither are your guys, but they can, I guess, flipping tires in their front yards, whatever they can do to keep in shape as camp comes up here. Hey, if things go according to plan, I think actually down your way, your schools are except for Kentucky, everybody's looking to be back in school around June 1st. So,
as far as like athletics and stuff like that, they're talking about having athletic facilities open for UGA relatively soon. I know the NCAA said they're not going to have any tournaments or whatever for the rest of the year, but yeah, I think the SEC, that they're pretty determined to do their thing at least in the fall. So I know you guys want to do your thing, especially with basketball season, you know. So
football is a huge money maker. Everybody's got to play football to fund everything else. And I saw a quote from the governor of West Virginia that said if he has to suit up himself, West Virginia's gonna be playing football. So. Yeah, again, you know, we got our priorities, whatever we got them in, but things are moving in a good direction. And from that standpoint, one thing that's not taking off, like, of course, NASCAR is starting back up this weekend. One thing that's not taking time off is at least American wrestling. Now, Japanese wrestling has taken, at least New Japan wrestling has taken this time off, but American wrestling has tried to stay online. We'll talk about both the major American companies. The first we'll talk about has not done a good job in some people's opinions. I think we might both be on that page with at least the Money in the Bank show from last week. So we're a few days past that now. It's had time to sink in. It's also had time to go out of our systems. Maybe that's a better part of this. But the Money in the Bank show, we were both texting each other during that brief show, 2.5 hours, yeah. 2.5 hour show. So, Josh, I'll let you start. I'll let you have some fun here. You get to be the heel. What your thoughts on Money in the Bank from last Sunday night?
I'll start with the good, and then I'll go to the ugly. I really enjoyed going back and watching Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. That match was so solid, so good, so hard-hitting. The pace was fantastic. It was borderline hardcore because of how brutal it was and how, you know, the shots they were giving and taking, and the pace of the match was just fantastic. These guys can really work together really, really well, and I think that's a feud that we will be seeing for a while. And I think Seth Rollins has cemented himself as a heel for the long haul, and I think Drew McIntyre has cemented himself as possibly, maybe, the face of the company, at least in the heavyweight championship realm. And both those guys are incredibly impressive. I've been a huge fan of Drew McIntyre for over a decade. And his work in TNA is really, really underrated, much as, Bully Ray, he was Bully Ray in Impact, and Bubba Ray Dudley is what he's largely known as. His work in TNA was fantastic. Eric Young, kind of the same deal. And Seth Rollins is just a professional, and he's a great storyteller, great athlete. I think that match really showed that those guys are the apex athletes and performers in WWE right now. So now let's get to the other thing. I don't even want to call it a match. WWE had the bright idea of holding both Money in the Bank contract matches at the exact same time. And it wasn't even really a match because they started off on the bottom floor of Titan Tower or whatever, WWE headquarters. And somehow they made their way up to the top floor. And it felt like a really cheesy, poorly executed reality TV show. Just these groups of people are running through the building, and then They're in the weight room for a little bit, and there's a food fight for a little bit, and then you get to the top of the roof, and then you kind of get the Money in the Bank matches a little bit, but it was so boring, and it's so herky jerky, and nobody got to have high spots. What I'm accustomed to with Money in the Bank matches is being maybe some of the best matches of the year. You look at that pay per view, and you're going to get solid performances. Lots of people are going to get to show out. Lots of people are going to be able to kind of, you know, elevate their stock a little bit inside those matches. And the winner, you feel like, yeah, all right, that's probably the next guy or the next girl, next woman. This pay-per-view was – and then how do you – and what do they do with AJ? AJ had the briefcase, but then they claimed he fumbled it, and it ends up in Otis's hands. And he's somehow the winner. It's like, oh, the pacing, the storytelling, the acting. It was the Brother Love cameo was okay. But, man, it was trying too hard. It really felt like going back. If you go back and watch like some of the old WCW gimmick matches, and in particular the Tower of Doom, where there's like five cages stacked on top of each other, and it's somehow a match. That's what it felt like. It was a joke, and it felt like a slap in the face. Honestly, it was just dumb and boring, and it felt like bad reality TV. That's just my take on this past year's Money in the Bank.
Yeah, for me, Money in the Bank, outside of the big three pay-per-views on the yearly calendar, those three, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, it's my favorite of the non of the big three. because the prop to me is the best. I call it the best prop in all of wrestling. I think it's an even the briefcase itself is a better prop than even a championship belt.
Because for some characters, yes.
Well, because the championship belt is around the guy's waist or the gal's waist, and you know they're the champ, and you have to beat them to be a champ. The person who holds the briefcase can walk around it, everywhere that person is on TV screens and in arenas. They could cash in that briefcase and win a championship. And
they're a constant threat.
Yeah, they're a constant threat. And we were given the stat during the pay-per-view that 82% of the holders of those briefcases have gone on to win a world championship. Their word for that. 82, it's 9 out of 11 if that's right. So sure. I'll take their word for that and say, yeah, that's a you're deciding who the next person's going to be. To award it this way, I agree. It wasn't wrestling at all. It was slapstick at best. I refer to it as a hour-long Three Stooges episode. the Brother Love cameo was fine. There was someone dressed as Doink the Clown. And then what? Wasn't there another cameo?
Vince came out.
Oh, yeah. Vince in the boardroom, yeah. I mean, there was a person mopping a floor and wrestlers running into the wet floor. I mean, whoever greenlighted this. when they first came up telling us that they were going to start the Money in the Bank part of the show, it was around, 8:15 or 8:20 when you're watching it live. Okay, that's good timing because, give us 45 minutes for the women's match and 45 for the men or vice versa, and we'll get to 10 o'clock and we'll have, it'll be a full show. And then, they're going to do it all at once? There was no wrestling to it. It wasn't very well. It was a dumb idea executed poorly. And then, at least in the men's match, now that we know, and I'll fast forward for the second just to say, now that we know Becky Lynch was going to surrender the title, the move to put the Money in the Bank briefcase on Asuka and have her be the top champion makes sense. She's the most established of those ladies. And we now know that the plan apparently was for Becky Lynch to win and for Shayna Baszler to win, and then they would feud and that would lead to whatever it was going to lead to. But now that, Becky's out of the equation, yeah. Otis doesn't need a championship. He's a character right now who's over enough without a belt. And that's one part of the Otis. The other part of the Otis is, even though he was a serious amateur wrestler, a serious, really good college wrestler, he's not been presented as such on the main show. And so putting that briefcase on him, the idea that Otis is going to be challenging for a world championship just doesn't make a lot of sense. In my preview, I'll tell you, I thought Shayna Baszler, and of course, now that we know Becky Lynch is out of the equation, I can totally understand what they did. I thought it made more sense to go with Aleister Black because Rey Mysterio doesn't need a championship opportunity. AJ Styles doesn't need a briefcase to get one. The winner of the men's match, the whole way it was carried out, nothing good to say about any of that.
No, not at all. That's a pay-per-view that kind of writes itself. And if you just have the matches, you're good. And you let the performers go out and do what they do, you're good. You had a really solid world championship match with Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. The other championship match with Strowman and Bray wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. I'm curious here's the thing. Like, Strowman beat Wyatt, but the Fiend's coming next. So that's kind of where that's at. Bray Wyatt just wasn't – I think that's how they're going to continue that storyline, that Bray Wyatt just didn't have the venom in him to destroy Strowman. So that's there's going to be another confrontation there. The women's match and the men's match was just – it was bad because you had all these uber athletes, all these people that could have performed, and the setting was cool. It was just a different place to have the pay-per-view, to have the match. I don't know why they didn't have the whole pay-per-view there and just like call it, that's what it is. That's just where it's going to be, on top of Titan Tower this time around. As far as the winner, Otis, he's a common man. He's a I've looked at him and thinking about him as a character way more than I ever had before, and what they're trying to do with him. He reminds me a lot of a Hacksaw Jim Duggan sort of a guy, and maybe sort of maybe Dusty when he did his WWE run, just like this common man, you know, lovable, easy to like sort of a character. That could get the crowd laughing and feeling good. And then, you know, you could have this face that could do the comedy shtick and embarrass some sort of a heel, you know, just by making fun of them or, you know, whatever, by being a funny person. But yeah, man, it just doesn't work. And I like Otis. I think it's funny. I think it's good comic relief, but it's just not at this time. We want action. We want matches. You know, him and the Mandy thing is fine. It's funny. I think it's whatever. But, man, yeah, I would like to see Aleister Black walk around with that briefcase for a year and say, when am I going to pick a fight? I'll pick a fight when I'm ready. Or give it – well, you said Mysterio doesn't need it, but at the same time, I'm kind of like – one of the things I want – one of the things that Kane didn't get that I wish he would have gotten was a final championship run as just being like, thank you for being so awesome. Thank you for being, you know, a stalwart and a cornerstone of our company for so long. I want that from Mysterio as well. So I was kind of I was pulling for Mysterio in the match, and that's just kind of what I wanted to see. To see him come in, you know, take the belt off of a heel, and Mysterio is like a hero champion for a little bit, and that's just kind of like his swan song. But that's not where we're at. That's not what they did. So yeah, it's really disappointing, and it's, like I said, insulting to our intelligence as wrestling fans. That whole match was, it was dumber than Saturday morning cartoons.
And jumping off your point about Otis, and I'll go the same route with Bray Wyatt. I think that both fit from overall WWE has 7 hours of programming each week perspective. Bray Wyatt fits an important role, and so does Otis. But yeah, neither, in my opinion, should be in a championship picture, because what they do at their best has nothing to do with actual fake competition, you know, simulated competition. Yeah. They are either comic relief or just, you know, you have to suspend your disbelief to buy into either character. And, you know, that match with Strowman and Wyatt, the way it ended, I mean, for the most part, that match was competed as, you know, simulated competition, and it was fine. And then when, you know, Strowman went to the floor and came back with the mask on, and, you know, we see the various puppets interjecting with their thoughts. I mean, it was just, this is just dumb. You know, this went from good to just dumb. And for a championship match. Now, again, if it's a grudge match, if he's, you know, tormenting Randy Orton or whatever he's doing, you know, that's one thing. But same with Otis on the face side of the comic relief side. So they don't need a belt, and it's almost like it's counterproductive to even put them in that picture. Well, you mentioned Dusty and Hacksaw from back in the day. Dusty's WWE run, he was a serious guy in the NWA for all those years, three-time world champion. But the polka dot wearing common man was he had a different but very valuable role. So did Hacksaw. Hacksaw Jim Duggan didn't need anything. He just needed his American flag and his 2x4, and he'd say ho. And that's all you needed out of him. And he, you know, we booked him on our AWE pay-per-view. We had him several times working for our company from 2011 to 2015. Hacksaw Jim Duggan puts butts in seats. He doesn't put butts in seats because he's a good wrestler. He puts butts in seats because he's a character.
He's a character. He's funny, and people love him, and they just want to see him do his thing. And they know when you see a Hacksaw Jim Duggan match, you're going to see a couple of big hits. And you're going to get the entertainment stuff, and he's going to walk. He's going to walk around the ring. He's going to, you know, shake hands and kiss babies, and, you know, be a buffoon. But man, that's his thing, and it worked very, very well for him. And as a kid, I can honestly say, as a kid, up until about 10 years old, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was absolutely one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. I loved Hacksaw Jim Duggan so much as a kid. I thought he was the funniest dude. I loved watching his matches. The most entertaining guy. Especially on WCW TV way back when. And I was like, man, I was so – when he got the U.S. belt off of Austin back in WCW, I was so happy about that. Because, like, hey, man, my guy has the belt, you know. I thought it was a huge moment for me as a kid. Like, well, as a wrestling fan, I absolutely remember when Hacksaw Jim Duggan won the U.S. title off of Stone, well, what was to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. But yeah, the Otis character, yeah, you, I think what it does also, it puts a wet blanket on the Mandy angle that they're running. So unless there is a payoff to where Otis gets screwed out of that briefcase and Mandy is booked as like some sort of like the massive bitch heel in WWE, like that's the only way this makes sense. And like somehow Ziggler ends up with the briefcase. That would be gold. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you kind of robbed this for me. You robbed me of one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time in a time where, you know, it would be really easy just to give us solid athletic matches and just not do the dog and pony show and smoke and mirror. I think like the reaction to the cinematic matches at Mania maybe gave Vince and Bruce too much confidence in those style of matches and that idea. You know, you got to do it every once in a while, man. You do it too much and it doesn't work. And they did it too much too soon and it absolutely didn't work. And for the first time since I've been, you know, a paying customer of the WWE Network, I considered canceling. I was just, this is horrible. It's so bad.
And I've already done that once, and I came back. I dropped it after, I'm trying to think when it was, earlier this year. And then when everything else shut down sports-wise, at least this is something. But, yeah, it's moving in that direction. And, you know, it's almost like, I say this all the time, and we say this on our shows because I bring it up. This is where I'm making the transition. I'll start talking some AEW.
Sure, man.
AEW continues to seem to get it right in terms of how they put their shows on. There's more energy. There's more.
Oh, yeah.
Even better shot. It's even better produced. Looking ahead now to AEW and where things are heading there, we both got this up on our screens. I mean, I like where things are going with their Double or Nothing, which is next weekend. John Moxley and Brody Lee, you know, you're bringing in a guy, the former Luke Harper. You make mm-hmm. him the head of the Dark Order, and he's already challenging for the championship, and there's a little bit of heat there between those guys.
Absolutely.
This Cody Lance Archer match, I don't know what I think about the idea of Mike Tyson presenting the title of the winner, except that I'm sure I'm not the only person. Josh, if you've seen this, that video of Mike Tyson training in boxing where he looks like he's 20 years old again. You know, he looks like he could still be Iron Mike Tyson from back in the 80s. Exactly. You makes you wonder about this. The casino ladder match looks interesting. So, I mean, and then on top of that, yeah, the Elite Inner Circle, what they're calling a stadium stampede match. I'm excited about this AEW card coming up. And so, you know, on the one hand, it seems like we're both kind of down in the dumps, to say the least, about WWE. I'm very excited about this AEW show coming up in a few days.
It's going to give us everything that we've missed from WWE. And it really does feel like an awesome follow-up to what WrestleMania was this year. And that I will say, and for the circumstances, I thought WrestleMania this year was a great show. And from top to bottom, both nights, you know, for what they had to work with, they did a really, really good job. And I'll say this, like when a couple of weeks ago when they brought back in AEW, you know, for Dynamite, they switched to that outdoor seating in arena with a canopy. The look of that, the feel of that, it makes it feel big. It makes it feel like a show, something that's, you know, a spectacle to watch on TV again. Whereas, you know, the studio no audience stuff has just felt so canned and sterile, and there's no action, there's no life in those settings. AEW's done a little bit with having wrestlers at ringside, but it still feels kind of, it's not the same. But when they move, well, AEW moved back into where that arena is, that setting is. Place. What's that?
It's called Daly's Place. It's just outside of the Jaguars NFL stadium.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome venue. Like it's becoming like my favorite venue prior in pro wrestling was Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. ECW, those the shows they put on there were just the visual of that room, how packed it was, the energy. That's my favorite venue in pro wrestling history. Small venue, anyways. Large venue, I really don't think you can argue with the Superdome in New Orleans. That place is just electric for WrestleMania. But anyway, we'll go on to this pay-per-view. The casino ladder match, I made a joke on my 706 dirt sheet page. I was like, hey man, what do you want to bet that WWE tries to find a way and sue AEW for a championship ladder match or a championship opportunity ladder match? But the match itself is, and there's three guys aren't even actually announced for the match yet. So we've got Darby, we've got Colt, Cassidy, Phoenix, Scorpio, Kip Sabian. That card right there alone is sick. Absolutely sick. Now they need another big guy in the match. I don't know who they're going to put in there. Somebody that could throw some size around. But man, that's going to be fun. That's going to be awesome.
All those guys are workers. And that's the thing. It's a ladder match, and all those guys are workers. And so you just know there's going to be high spot after high spot in that match.
It's going to feel like AAA. Like, it's going to feel like Lucha Libre almost. And all these guys, they're going to respect each other. They're going to give each other their time. Everybody in that match is going to have a spot or two, right? Where you're just like, that was really cool. And they're going to work really, really well together. And I'm really – this is going to be the first – I think this is the first ladder match in AEW that I don't think there has been one before yet.
I don't remember any. I'm trying to think, was there a tag match maybe? But I don't think there has – I think you might be right about that.
But at the same – but this brings in, like, these guys, they're used to these sort of, like, ladder matches to try to, like, to pop a territory. That kind of thing, like running on the independent scene. And, you know, a lot of these guys, at least like Allen and Cassidy and Phoenix, have worked together on the independents for years here and there. But Pentagon, I think that would be a guy that – Pentagon Jr., I think that would be another dude that would be fantastic to add to this match. Maybe you can get like Jungle Boy thrown in there or something like that. But the roster is pretty good right now. Who else might be missing from the paper? Oh, Jungle Boy is against MJF, so we can't do that.
Yeah. I what I'll say about this match, I'm thinking like a booker now. When we booked our pay-per-view, we started off with two cruiserweights. We wanted to speed the show up a little bit, get the fans popping. I wonder if you think about this, and I'll throw this out there for your consideration, Josh. What about this match opening the show to set the tone for this show?
Possibly. I think something that, looking at the card, if you're doing a stadium stampede match, you might have opportunity there to get your high spots and get the brutality out of the way and kind of set the tone for it being just a nasty, nasty event. Maybe get guys getting color early on in the show. I don't know, man. The Stadium Stampede, now that I think about it, that might be a little bit of a bloody match, the way that they're booking it, the way they've built it up just being kind of so hot. You're probably right, man. You're probably right. You'd probably go casino ladder match first off, let it go 30, 35 minutes, let it be a huge time chunk of the show, and maybe calm it back down with the AEW Women's Championship a little bit with something that kind of, you know, gets people still kind of interested, and then go from the show from there, and, you know, rev it back up with a bloody match with the Stadium Stampede. But like, and I think you have a double main event on this card, honestly. The TNT Championship and the World Championship, they need to be, you know, TNT Championship decided right before the World Championship, especially if they're going to bring in Mike Tyson to award the belt. I don't know. Like maybe, you're probably right with the casino ladder match first off, unless they're going to do some stuff with the tag team, the buy-in show. Anyways, you're probably right for the main card. That's pre-show. So yeah, you're probably right with the casino ladder match. But I would say you have it go for a long time. I would say that's a really long match.
Give them 30, 35, 45 minutes if you have to, so they all get their spots in. Now, what do you think in terms of, I guess we don't have all the participants in this yet, but looking at who we have now, who do you think the winner of this receives a future world championship match? Who gets that out of this?
Well, let's look at the main event. Then we have to ask ourselves who wins the world championship. I think that's a really important question, because I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Moxley is going to get, a hard fought victory over Brody Lee. I think I could see Brody Lee, as we mentioned this a while back, with a heel champion sort of a thing. I think that might be good for AEW right now. Brody Lee as a heel champion with the belt, legitimately with the belt, could make good TV. And then Moxley, I think we've decided amongst ourselves that he is much better in the hungry dog, guy that's chasing a championship. And maybe if Brody Lee has the world championship, he will be the dealer. He will be the shot caller in a way that they've kind of been building up to with the character, his faux Vince McMahon sort of a thing that he's been building up to. So let's just assume Brody Lee wins the world championship. That's kind of what my call is there. So you want a face challenger? I think you go with Cassidy. I think that would be a guy the fans would pop. He has a gimmick that doesn't need much support. But if he had that contract in his back pocket, you would elevate his stock. You would take Cassidy from just kind of this cool, slightly comedic sort of a character, and he would be in the main event spot immediately. So the casino ladder match is exactly what it's trying to do, is move someone into the main event realm. Or you go with Scorpio Sky. The reason I say Scorpio Sky is because he's so athletic and so good. And he's kind of coming out of nowhere, but he's also very believable athletically. If he has that, I've got this shot and I'm going to cash it in when I want to cash it in kind of a thing, that's a guy you can move him and be a believable contender for the world championship. I think the fans would line up behind Scorpio Sky really, really quickly. If he had that opportunity, if he was a threat to Brody Lee.
I can see that's good reasoning, because there's no briefcase here, but this is essentially a Money in the Bank briefcase kind of match.
Right.
You use that briefcase, and WWE has used it for years to say, this is who we're saying is our next big star. And Scorpio Sky could benefit from that in a way that even Orange Cassidy or Darby Allin, those are the two guys I was looking at coming out of this, because I'm going to go with your reasoning too. I think Brody Lee comes out of this with the belt. Also, I think that a determining factor there is going to be, now that we're having a second singles belt, I think it's pretty clear Cody's going to be that champion, at least in my view. And so you have a singles champion who is a face for your heels to chase after. Then you have your top singles champion is a heel for your faces to go after.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, either of those guys, Orange Cassidy, Darby Allin, who's been getting more face time with these little run-ins with Taz lately, which has my interest piqued, but he's getting that face time. Orange Cassidy, just in general, is already over with fans. Scorpio Sky, you're right, athletically and everything else, and he's got the mic skills. He's been part of a three-man tag team since the beginning of AEW, and really for the last few years with SCU. So to break him out of that and give him this opportunity, if you put this title shot around his waist, essentially, then you're giving fans a reason to say, hey, Scorpio Sky, he used to be in that tag team. Now he's the next future champion contender. That would give him elevation that otherwise he wouldn't get naturally, I wouldn't think.
Well, absolutely. And let me turn that around on you, man, because I'm really curious to see, do you think, as you were talking, I was like, well, what if Archer – over text, we've kind of thought like Cody will walk away with the TNT championship. If that's true, if that's what happens, Lance Archer is a monster heel, potentially monster heel. And Jake the Snake Roberts is pushing the envelope with, non PC stuff. on AEW TV, which is like, well, that's kind of ball. I did not expect him to go, like, especially some of the stuff he said. But so you got a non-PC type of a heel with Lance Archer. Maybe he doesn't need a championship. Maybe that's what they're thinking about. But does he go after Brody Lee if Brody Lee is champion? I don't know. I think, oh my gosh, this card has so many ramifications for the future of AEW. But let me ask you, how do you see this card? I'm calling the three main events: the World Championship, TNT Championship, and the Casino Ladder Match. Now, I've already like put a bug in your ear. But what was maybe going into our conversation? What was, you know, maybe your thoughts about how this show would go down for the major championships?
I really think that if it's me booking it, I have one of my top champs is a face and one's a heel. And I know when I'm watching, I'll use those context clues. So my assumption is, of course, Cody Lance Archer is going to go in before the World Championship match. So the winner of that kind of tells me, in my mind at least, who's going to win the World Championship match. I don't think you really benefit having both champs heels or both champs being faces. But also, I think, you know, the Casino Ladder Match winner will kind of tell us. I don't know. When I say that, at least as of now, I don't know that I would really call any of those guys. I mean, they can be heels or faces, but nobody's really established in that group as being a heel or a face. So I don't know that that gives us any context clues.
I would say with Darby Allin is, I would say he's their Sting. I think he's a light heavyweight Sting. Yeah. Cabana, he's a face, but he's not going to win this match. That if he won it, that'd be probably the most shocking.
He's a veteran who will work great in this match, and the guys will work great off him, and that's why he's there. To help set up a really good match with the other guys. That's what he's there.
He's a teacher. He's a coach. Yeah. And he's very good. And I'm a huge Colt Cabana mark. So if you ever want to send me some Colt Cabana merch, feel free. Now that we're talking about building the card. I'm not 100% sure if they don't open the card with the TNT Championship, and it's a brutal, fast-paced, hard-hitting, we're coming at you with a championship match. We're going to go ahead and get this out of the way. We're going to set the tone. We're going to make news. Also, if they have the TNT Championship at the beginning of the show, it's newsworthy, and it starts trending on social media.
That's a good point.
Immediately. So now that we're talking about it, I'm changing my prediction. So the TNT Championship is first, and then you follow it up with the casino at some point.
Well, and I'll go with you on that too, because I'm starting to think I'm putting my sports media hat on now. Sunday night is, or no, this is a Saturday night, isn't it? It's a Saturday night. So it's not competing with anything else in that sense. But Saturday night, they're going to want to make sure that, if this is at 7 o'clock, or I'm not sure what time the show starts. Let's see, it starts at 8 o'clock. So even if it's 8 o'clock, I mean, you know, if Mike Tyson comes out first, then yeah, people who happen to have on either ESPN or Fox Sports 1 Saturday night will see in the crawl, hey, Mike Tyson presents. And if Mike Tyson throws a punch at somebody, even better, right? He's not going to hand a belt to somebody. He's going to throw a punch.
Figured it out. That's how Cody wins. Jake the Snake gets involved, and like he starts messing with Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson comes in. He's like, no, the hell you won't. And he gives Archer, boom. Nice little right hook.
Yeah.
And then Cody comes in for the win. That'd be so good.
And everybody – so you see the crawl. You get the Twitter aspect of it. And then, you know, leading SportsCenter at 11 o'clock, Scott Van Pelt's talking about Mike Tyson decks a 6'8", 300-pound wrestler with a combination. And you appropriately get what you want. Whereas if you put that towards the end, it's less time for that to have the impact. So – I think we're starting to figure something out here.
We figured it out, man. I think that's the money call right there. That match, first off, TNT Championship has to be first. In my opinion, it has to be first. And then you put the ladder match maybe later in the card.
Later in the card, but you don't come back after that. After you get your headlines with Mike Tyson, you come back with like MJF, Jungle Boy, and Britt Baker, Chris Statlander, and you come back down a little bit to allow that buzz to continue getting out on social media. You show a couple of highlights. Hey, if you're just joining us, here's Mike Tyson knocking out Lance Archer. Yes. And then you go to your casino ladder match because you at by 8:15 or by 9:15, 9:30, you've got more viewers. And you might
spike buys if you start off with that match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're trying to make some money now. Coding the Bucks, if you're listening, if you hadn't already thought this through, which you probably have, but if you haven't,
these guys are a lot smarter than us. Yeah. So let's be honest. So let's, So anyway, the card is extremely interesting. I think that's the point we're getting to. And the stadium stampede, that kind of reminds me of like old school, you know, ECW or like a WCW, like feud match or something like that.
War games type thing, four horsemen against the superpowers. What? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the fact that it's a damn near empty arena, they can do so much more because you watch like, what was it? And a match that I think was really good, but I think it was hindered because there was too many people around, was Shane McMahon versus The Miz a couple years at WrestleMania. I thought it was a damn good match, really underrated. I think The Miz is a very underrated performer. I also think he hinders himself. I don't think he wants to get injured. I think he wants to work safe as much as possible. But that match was good. But at the same time, there were so many people around. They couldn't do the things that they were trying to do. I think it could have been better if there weren't so many people around.
Did you see the match, not this past Wednesday, but last Wednesday, Omega and Hardy against the Sex Gods?
The way they did
that in Daily Plot. Now that's in Daily Center. That's 2-on-2. I imagine that was a test run for a 5-on-5 version, using the entire stadium. I mean, there's the nice meme of when Omega ran over Guevara with the golf cart. But they put Hardy. They locked him in the ice box. I mean, there was a really good spot. I was a little scared of it because it was live, where Omega got up on the scissor lift and did a moonsault off the scissor lift and looked like he was pretty close to not doing a full revolution on that, just because of the nature of jumping off a scissor lift. But man, they did some spots in that match, and it felt like to me, if that's 2-on-2 version of what we're going to have a 5-on-5 version coming up, that's going to be a that itself could be, whether it's your main event or just your final match. Just because of how much damage that's going to do to Daily Center. That's
possibly.
Yeah.
I think what they'll do with that is they'll split up the groups. I think what you'll have is you'll have two or three groups fighting it out in different spots, and they'll kind of reconvene at an appropriate time to finish out the business. You say 5-on-5, but, you know, there's going to be other people. This would be a really good opportunity for AEW to expand the footprint of maybe the Elite or the Inner Circle, maybe introduce some new characters. That would be interesting too. That's some stuff that we haven't.
And also the possibility of a turn in either or both factions. We've been talking about this at least on text the last few weeks, but the opportunity for something a miss to happen and for something to be misconstrued by partners, or just a good old fashioned swerve. And someone joins the other side, and of course that would be a face turning heel. But there's opportunities there, and that this is not going to just be a straight somebody's going to win this match. And
no.
There's going to be something out of this that's going to feel like it's going to turn. It's going to be the next storyline after this show's over to take us towards the summer.
Well, you know, just that we're talking, me and you, we've had several conversations about one Mr. Adam Page. He ain't on the card officially.
Right.
So you got to think at some point he's gonna pop up. Yeah. So we don't have a World Tag Team Championship match on this card. And maybe that's on purpose. That's something we're looking at, like a split. Or I think honestly the best thing for AEW right now would be, and I think it's one of the smarter things WWE's done in a while, is to strip Sami Zayn of the Intercontinental Championship. It's kind of a dead championship. It's really easy to forget about the mid-card titles, especially now. And Sami Zayn, I think, was a great Intercontinental Champion. He's just really bad luck, terrible timing for him to be put in that position. But, yeah, you strip him of that championship and maybe give him a chance to re-earn it. He's done some social media stuff. basically calling it bullshit and I've been screwed, yada yada. But yeah, I mean, if AEW does something similar with the tag team titles, that'd be interesting. And then you have an entire card, then you have an entire roster that has something to do and something meaningful to do on TV for the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, yeah, until the next AEW supercard or pay-per-view or whatever you want to call it. But
yeah, their show would probably be the late August show, and maybe by late August, just like summer, we presume SummerSlam will at least have some ability to have some fans in attendance. And you can build towards that. That will be the next AEW pay-per-view. Their last year, they were late August, so presumably they'd be around the same time this year.
Full gear.
Yeah. I like that pacing that they have. You know, the WWE obviously has their business model, and it's being threatened right now by the current situation. But for me, the pacing of once a quarter, you get 3 months in between big shows, allows things to develop at a more logical pace than needing to refresh every. I mean, basically every month you've got to refresh everything in WWE for three different shows, and it gets chaotic, hectic, everything else. This is a more natural process. It feels much more so, but that also puts pressure on you when you have your show. You can't just have the show be all resolutions. You have to plant some seeds in that show towards the next 3 months.
Well, absolutely. I mean, WrestleMania has become that way. WrestleMania, it used to be where it was a resolution show. It was a climax show. And for some situations it is, but for the most part, it's a setup show. It's a major setup show. Now, WrestleMania is different. It's hard not to talk about WrestleMania when we talk about pro wrestling, when we talk about pay-per-views. But what WrestleMania has become is, I think where the Royal Rumble used to be was you would set up your next series of people to push, maybe even Survivor Series as well. You would use those shows as your major focal points of like, okay, these are the people that we're going to rely on for the next, you know, 6 months to Mania. And then we're doing something else, and we're gonna try something else. But yeah, it's so fluid now, and I think so. The wrestling business has changed in such a way, and I'm not sure if they completely understand the scope of what they're trying to do, but trying to make it WWE anyway, trying to make it more akin to a regular sports brand, and keep it kind of rolling, keep it like everything's connected, storyline wise. And you don't really, a feud might have a climax, a championship might change, but it's not necessarily over anymore. I'm not saying that's good or bad, it's just the way it is. But here's the thing with what AEW is doing, it's when they put on a show like this, it feels like a big deal. It feels like something that you have to pay attention to versus WWE. I mean, they could put, you know, there, you have some months, if you have an NXT show and a regular pay-per-view, I mean, that's 10 hours of TV sometimes of watching of these events that you have to keep up with. And that doesn't, you know, count in, you know, the NXT shows during the middle of the week. That doesn't count in Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, if you're trying to watch. And also the WWE is really trying to pull in viewers with their, the specials that are coming up and the documentary specials, which are pretty good. The Undertaker thing is a pretty cool, pretty interesting idea. But anyway, back to AEW and what they're trying to do with this particular pay-per-view. I view this Double or Nothing as AEW has established itself, and this is the first time they're doing something, a pay-per-view that has serious consequences. And they can establish storylines and characters and, you know, try to give a direction for the company for the next 3 or 4 months of TV. So this, for me, this is a big deal for AEW. I think this is going to be a great show. I hope it's going to be a great show anyway. But yeah, to me, this is a big deal for them. I think they're viewing it as their first opportunity to kind of tell their own story and move beyond like the reputation of the people that were that make up AEW, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, that's pro wrestling. That's in, on the independent scene. You build cards off of prior reputations, but now you have a company. Now you have a company with an identity. This is the first time I think AEW is going to say, this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. And we'll be able to telegraph, I think, after the show, what AEW is going to feel like, look like for the next quarter or so. Sorry, I kind of went on a long tangent there.
That's okay. No, that's okay. No, I like that. Now, I'm going to start wrapping us up here. We're getting close to, we're at the 50-minute mark. So I want to wrap up the show. And we will come back next week. Josh and I will come back next week for our viewers out there, listeners on our archive. And we'll give you a more in-depth look as we get ready for Double or Nothing next week. But I wanted to wrap up, Josh, by giving you an opportunity to talk about, you know, you mentioned early in the podcast, something you're doing podcast-wise with your Southern Violence of Wrestling. And so talk about that a little bit more. Give us an indication and also give us an indication how people can tune in.
Sure enough. Right now, the episodes are on SoundCloud. SVW Deep Cuts would be a good way to look that up. Just the letters SVW Deep Cuts. Southern Violence of Wrestling, it's out of Athens, Georgia. The roots are in the hardcore kind of blood and guts sort of vein of pro wrestling. But, you know, it's much more different. It's much more akin to ECW storyline telling and interesting, you know, characters and, you know, trying to just elicit a response from the fans and get people's heads a little bit. Anyways, so what Deep Cuts is I've had the privilege of sitting down with several of the members of the roster and just talking to them about their history in the pro wrestling business, why they, you know, they're still in it. Even, you know, if even though it's there might be at like a hobby level sort of interest or involvement in the pro wrestling game. Talk to them about storytelling, talk about their opinions, talk to them about the drama that comes with being a promoter and a wrestler on the independent scene in Georgia, that kind of thing. They're really long form talks. So, you know, give yourself some time and space to dissect these things. I've got 6 episodes up right now. I'm speaking to both of the co-owners, Justin Legend and Ryan Murdoch. Those guys are the co-owners right now. Ryan Murdoch, he founded the company. And another guy, Axelrod, he's Axel Foley. He is one of the mainstays in the company. So we have a sit down with him. Axel's popped up a couple times and Ryan's popped up a bunch. And I have one long take with Justin so far. But yeah, so SVW Deep Cuts, just a deep inside look into what it's like to be a professional wrestler and the opinions of professional wrestlers and just why in the world would you do what you do, once a month or however long they do it. So that's what it is.
I have found link for a Facebook group for, so what should I look for, Josh? I want to post something on the Facebook thread here on our site. You say SVW Deep Cuts. How can I link to you?
Okay, so the easiest thing to do might be to link to 706 Dirt Sheet. Okay. And down on there, you'll see all the links to all the episodes on SoundCloud. Gotcha. So if you go there, you might have to scroll through some stuff. You'll see some of my ridiculousness and, you know, just stuff that I post every once in a while. But all the links to the episodes will be there. And so once you click on a link, I think one of those links will lead you to another link, another episode, that kind of a thing.
Okay, I'm doing that right now. I found the 706 Dirt Sheet Facebook group, and I'm posting a link to that right now. So for our viewers out there live, for our viewers on the archive, for our listeners on the archive, go to the Augusta Free Press Facebook page, and you can get the shortcut there. It gets you in the right direction, and that just popped up now live as we're doing this. So that's glad to be able to do that. Let's throw some people your way.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And the ultimate goal, of course, is to have my stuff out on Apple you know, podcast and Google Play in the near future. Just haven't gotten around to doing that kind of a thing yet. But SoundCloud, it's all there, and their quality is pretty good. So,
well, and when you get those links, we'll share those as well. But so for our viewers out there, for our listeners on the archives, we will be back next week, and we'll give you the last preview before Double or Nothing's AEW show, and look forward to that. Josh, thanks for your time today. Great talking with you.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
And for our viewers out there, have a great weekend, and we will talk again soon.